Well, hi, friends, and welcome back to the Ecclesia Leadership Podcast. This is number 25. We got the number out in the open right from the start, so we don't have to fumble our way through that. My name is John Chandler. I'm down in Austin, Texas, and with me is Matt Alexander. Matt, where are you from?
Well, I am from Dallas, Texas.
Where are you now?
Well, okay, yeah, exactly. This is a better question. Yeah. I am currently in Miami, where I have been in as a church planner pastor for over 5 years now with Rhythm Church down here. And it's about 70 degrees with a nice little breeze in sunny Miami, Florida. Not a cloud in the sky, John.
Are you just saying that to flaunt to taunt our guests today? Because I know they're nowhere close to Florida.
Well,
we're close to 70 degrees.
Yeah?
We hit 50 yesterday.
Wow. But if I mean, you're so far north, the sun probably just rose.
What's the sun?
Right. So let's take a few moments, because we are with some of the leaders from the Well Church, or Church at the Well is technically how you say it, in Burlington, Vermont. Why don't each of you just take a couple seconds or moments to introduce yourself and describe what your role with the church is?
Sure. I'm Adam. We have a church merger. So 3 years ago, we joined two churches together. So we still define our roles. We kind of mix them up and take turns. Right now, it's my turn to blame the rest of the guys for anything that goes wrong. Which I really like that role. It's my favorite one.
He developed that role on his own.
Yeah. I moved to Vermont almost 8 years ago to plant a church. And we've been Church at the Well. We merged two churches together a little over 3 years ago, it was. And so the roles have changed. Right now I'm full-time, and Kevin is part-time. We just took Ian on staff part-time this year. But I've also been part-time, and Kevin's been full-time. And so the roles have switched around quite a bit.
So do you want to talk about the roles as of today, knowing that by the time we publish this in the next week, they might be different?
They might be different.
Probably not in a week.
Maybe
we're
2 weeks.
We're not that smart. It takes us longer.
So we don't really have like a lead pastor type role. We kind of co-pastor. And one thing that I like about this kind of setup that we kind of fallen into, it's not something I think that we set out to do, but what I like about it is that none of us really care on what title we have, as long as things are getting done and we can all work together, which has been a really beautiful piece of kind of defining roles and taking time to tweak them some. So right now I'm the full-time staff, which means I have to do a lot of the admin and the stuff nobody really likes to do. But before that, Kevin did that. And so we just kind of swapped that around a bit. We both teach. I teach a little bit more on Sunday mornings than Kevin and Ian do. Kevin and I both kind of lead worship on the weeks that we're not teaching. We have a couple other worship leaders in the church. Pastoral load, I get a little bit more because I'm full-time, but we all kind of divvy that up as well. So that's kind of a quick breakdown.
Yeah.
Of what it looks
like. I'm curious then, because I like what you described, but I'm looking at the website right now, and you have titles on there.
Yeah.
Is that, do you find that that's beneficial just for people who are exploring the church, or what's the?
Yeah, that's the primary reason we did that. But everyone in our church, if you ask them who the pastor was, they would say two or three of us. Like, they wouldn't necessarily associate that. But it's people who are checking it out. It gives them a sense, a little bit of safety and credibility, I think, to see that there is a little bit of structure.
Yeah.
Although we fool them really well and try to look like we're structured. But we are in some ways. Like, in a sense, because I'm full-time, I have more responsibility. But we each kind of carry the burden of the church.
And so what's the unique giftings and voices that each of you bring to that shared leadership?
There's quite a bit of overlap. I'll let Kevin answer this one.
Okay. So I'm Kevin. Kind of filling that
part-time role. And I think it's actually interesting because when we first started, so I was the lead pastor of a church called St. Andrew's, and Adam had been the pastor planter of Mosaic, and we went through this process of merging together. And one of the things that we sort of had to grapple with was that we felt like our communities fit really well and our ministries fit really well together, but we had kind of have a lot of the same gifts in terms of public ministry. And so, you know, both I think are strong teachers and both have musical ability and lead worship. And so we've both kind of done those aspects of it. And I think from the outset, the concern was, how are we going to make this work where we don't feel like complementary as much as sort of duplicates, you know, in some ways in terms of our gifting. But when you dig a little bit deeper, I think we bring really different kind of hearts to ministry. Adam's more of the pastoral kind of minister of our church and does a lot of the caregiving and really does a lot to foster connection and community and leads our small groups. And, you know, certainly I contribute to that, and Ian does as well, but that's really kind of Adam's approach, even as a, you know, even though I think that we're both, like all of us are strong communicators, Adam is coming from more of a perspective of how can I encourage and challenge the congregation? How can I speak to and address the things that I've been hearing in the community in terms of what's going on in people's lives? And so he's bringing that, whereas I'm a little bit more of a teacher and talking about the text. And so again, I mean, we're kind of trying to balance those things, and in some ways, you know, the overlap is good, and we're learning from each other, and we're trying to incorporate some of the things that we each do well into what we do.
Yep.
But we also kind of have a little bit of a different heart and approach into the areas that we are functioning in.
Yeah, typically when you're staffing a church, you want to kind of have the opposite of that. You want to have somebody who's really, really good at administration, somebody who's really, really good with pastoral care. And there is quite a bit of overlap, which is different. But that being said, there's just a huge benefit of liking one another and being friends and enjoying working with each other. And you just learn how to kind of make up for what's missing when there is quite a bit of overlap in gifting.
Yeah.
And I think where we're getting strong, I mean, and I think, you know, it's been interesting. It's been an interesting process, but, you know, we have learned, I think, as we've gotten into this more and more, that we are complementary. Mm-hmm. I think even though there's a lot of overlap in terms of some of the things that we do, and so we try to get a lot out of the overlap. I mean, the fact that all three of us really like to preach and I think are strong communicators, we've really grown a lot, I think, through that. Because we're all learning from each other and kind of pushing each other. We actually get together every week and talk about not just, I mean, it's become kind of a staff meeting, but for a long time it was really about the worship service and how we were doing that and ways in which that we could, the things that we thought went really well and the things that we wanted to grow in. And so that process, I mean, I think I've grown more as a preacher the last couple of years than I had in the previous eight, because of the intentionality and the fact that it's something that we're all really passionate about. Mm-hmm. So we are bringing some complementary things, but then we've just really had to, and I think it's something, it's just an ongoing process for us, but we really need to utilize volunteers a lot for some of the areas where we're not very strong. You know, we rely on a lot of people to help with administration because it's not anything that any of us is great at. In fact, I remember at the last national gathering, John, you walked by, was in a coffee shop doing something, and you were kind of like, why are you doing it that way? you should have a software. So actually, we got Planning Center since then.
Yeah, thanks.
Because I was sending out like reminders.
I have no idea. I have no memory of that. But
yeah. No, I was. You were like,
I was a jerk.
You were prodding. It was like in between sessions, and you were like, hey, what are you doing? I'm like, well, I'm sending out reminder emails, you know, to all of our volunteers for Sunday. And you were like, I think it was you. You were like, you could just have that done automatically, and then you wouldn't have to do it. So it's just an example of, you know, we're not always, that's just not a great strength for any of us. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that we've kind of grown to be somewhat adequate. But because we have kind of a unique staffing situation, we just have to push we really have to be really reaching into the congregation and finding people who can fill in some of the areas where we're just not very good. Unfortunately, you know, we just have a really, in some ways that's good for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we're bringing a lot of people into the leadership kind of community of our church who aren't on staff.
Well, I'm curious about that, but let's dig backwards a little bit first and talk about, you know, you've already alluded to two churches, Mosaic and St. Andrews, I think you said. Mm-hmm. So why don't you talk a little bit about the story of how each of those churches started and how they came to be together and where Ian dropped into the picture?
Sure. Well, they both kind of started similarly in the sense that we were... It wasn't really courage that brought us to Burlington, because Kevin's from Michigan and I'm from New York. It was more naivety when you're young and you just believe God can do something and you're just stupid enough to believe it. And we both moved here with no planting team, no no group to meet with. And so we moved to, like, you know, Vermont is usually number one or two in the least church state in the country.
Right.
It's really compelling. It's a beautiful place to live. I was bringing my son Joshua over here for medical care often because it has an amazing hospital. And I have a son with some severe health issues. And so we were coming over here often, and I just felt like, man, this is a great place to plant a church. And Kevin came over here kind of similar. I'll let him kind of share quickly that story. But we both just got here and got jobs and met people and planted churches. And because Burlington's so small and it isn't really a church area, you know about other church planters. And so we were getting together. We were doing a prayer breakfast that a restaurant in town was hosting for pastors and campus ministers. We were getting together, talking, becoming friends. And it just became obvious that we could do more for the kingdom together than we could separately.
Well, why doesn't Ian, do you want to jump in and share about when you came in?
Yeah.
Just chronologically, that comes before the merger. So
right.
I moved out here originally to be a part of the church planning team at Mosaic. And so as Adam mentioned, there wasn't really kind of a really big team or anything that was really organized in getting Mosaic launched. But my wife had been a part of Adam's youth ministry when he was a youth pastor in upstate New York. And I was finishing my bachelor's degree in theology, and so I had an interest in ministry. I had an interest in church planning. And when Adam launched Mosaic, it was something I began to pray about and think about and visited Vermont and decided to move here. Felt like I could be a part of the team, could be useful, and felt like God could use me here. And they definitely needed people, so that's how I came to be a part of the church.
So when Ian came to Mosaic, our church started kind of funny. I remember our first church service, we had like 12 or 13 friends. None of them were Christ followers yet. None of them even knew church. So I remember starting worship, and they're all walking around talking, and a couple are hungover. And I had to stop them, like, hey, this is the time when we sing to God. And they looked at me like, what? We sing to God? We thought this was like the warm-up, you know, when you have music playing.
Sure.
And so my whole concept of how to plant a church was like out the window the first day. That was about a year into it. We took a whole year just to kind of live here before we had any public gathering or whatnot. And so when Ian and Luann came, they were some of the first Christians who were part of our church, which was really kind of strange in the sense that we've been meeting with all these people who are investigating Christ but not yet following Christ. And so it was great to have them come. It was like a huge, huge help.
And was there, did either of the churches start out of any kind of denominational stream or church planning organization or anything like that?
No, not for me. I was on staff at a non-denominational charismatic church up in New York for 12 years. And they sent me with a whole year of salary where it was great. I could just come here and kind of live and get to know folks. And they also gave us a little bit of seed money to start with. But that's the only affiliation we had was with that non-denominational church, which so for Mosaics, on Mosaic's end, we didn't have any affiliation really at all, which is so great about finding Ecclesia.
Yeah.
It's to kind of find that.
Right. So I came here to Burlington 10 years ago from Massachusetts, and we weren't connected with a denomination at the time. I had just finished seminary, and my wife and I had just kind of had this growing sense that we wanted to and needed to come to Vermont. I mean, it was really not a whole lot more complicated than that. We'd been up here several times and just had really fallen in love with this area. And so we did connect with the American Baptist Church they had in Vermont, New Hampshire. They had kind of had somebody on staff at the time for church planting and who was really wanted to see something happen in Burlington. And so we had a connection with them and received a little bit of financial support and really cultivated a lot of relationships with a lot of the It helped us to connect with a lot of the little Baptist churches in Vermont, New Hampshire, which is a lot of the makeup of these little towns. They have a lot of them are actually now united churches because the towns have kind of shrunk. They were a lot of them are mill towns, and that industry's gone away, and so they've lost population, and fewer people are going to church, and so the churches end up actually a lot of churches merge in Vermont, not the way ours did, but just out of necessity, where they'll have, and they actually kind of keep the congregation separate sometimes. You know, they'll worship together, but some people are like, well, I'm a Methodist, and oh, I'm a Baptist, or I'm a Congregationalist, but they have the same worship service. So there's a lot of these little united churches in a lot of the towns in Vermont, and so that was a really great connection for us to kind of get to know people. We did, when we chose to merge, we really had to set aside, you know, a lot of stuff. And so for us, it was just not a heritage or a background that the folks from Mosaic had. And so, you know, we just ended up deciding that we had to let that go. Although I've maintained a lot of those relationships and, you know, they're some of the people that we still kind of run into now and then. So we did have that background. And I just, you know, I can kind of just contribute a little bit to what Adam was saying about how we got to where we are, which is, you know, in a lot of ways we came here and we saw a very small kind of spark when we started our church. We didn't have anybody. We tried to recruit people to come with us and it just didn't work to have a team, but we just felt compelled to come here. And so it was just me and Rebecca, my wife. And we got jobs and got an apartment. But what we found was that there was nothing in terms of church that was really connecting for young people. That Burlington is actually a pretty young city. It's the one place in Vermont that's really young. But the churches are, you know, mostly 60-plus in terms of age. And so the fact that we kind of had a little group of young adults, mostly singles, that were gathering together for worship became, you know, pretty exciting for a very small group of people. You don't run around in Vermont broadcasting that you've planted a church and expect people to celebrate that fact. They're, you know, usually pretty skeptical and don't understand what it is that you're doing. So the only growth that really happens is when it's relational. When people kind of get to know you and they're like, well, what is this thing that you're doing? And they kind of want to connect. So we've had, and I think Mosaic had a similar experience, just a pretty small spark and really, you know, pretty minimal growth, but slow growth over time. And, you know, so we had kind of viable church communities, but struggling. And yeah, it just got to the point where you're trying to do what you can to kind of push it over the top. It's really hard to reach families because it always felt, I think, really difficult for a family with kids to want to plug into something that didn't feel like it was necessarily going to last.
A real thing.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think it's one thing when you're in your 20s and you're out of college and you just want to hang out with some people. If the thing folds, you know, the cost is much less for you than when you've brought your family to it. And so we, you know, people were really, really hesitant to kind of plug in. And there's a lot of skepticism in Vermont about anything that's new. You know, we learned that we were in Massachusetts before this, and you know, somebody pointed out to me at one time that if people in New England wanted something new, they would have left. You know, they were the people who stayed when other people were migrating west across the country. And so, you know, it's really built into the culture that new is not necessarily a good thing. So it took a lot of time for our churches to become established and for people to kind of respect what we were doing. And so what's happened is, you know, we finally made that decision to start not just, you know, supporting each other and encouraging one another, but to make it one church. And saw really like all the leadership of our church really get on board of that and become excited about that. And so that really helped because we had some synergy. And then now it seems like what's happened is that people just kind of seen that we've been around for a while. So not only has the ministry got a stronger foundation and we have, I think, more solid kind of leadership and just a little bit of a bigger community and stronger community through the merger, but we've now been here for 10 years. And so it seems like it's finally something happened where people are starting to kind of throw into it much more significantly. We've had a lot of the growth that we've had has been over the last year. So
you've alluded to it throughout this, but talk a little bit about Burlington. I mean, Adam, you already mentioned that it's, you know, Vermont itself is usually one of the least church states, one or two. And I assume, well, I don't assume, I know from talking to you guys and Zach Hogue, who also used to live in Burlington, that that's especially true in Burlington. So what's the, why is Burlington like that? And what's the makeup of it?
Burlington's a young city. I think the average age here is 29. So it's a transitory town. Lots of people come here for education, particularly in healthcare, field environmental sciences. It's a beautiful town. It's like there's no place more beautiful in the fall than Burlington, Vermont. It's just like outrageously gorgeous. People are great here. People care a lot about issues. They serve and volunteer like no place else. There's a really like a sense of responsibility to serve, which is fantastic if you're church planning. And so really what I a lot of friends that I talk to who are planning churches in other demographics in other areas, they say, wow, it must be really difficult to plant in Vermont because it's so unchurched. I'm like, it's actually not that difficult in the sense that, people do take – there is cynicism in the Northeast, and so it does take time. But if you invest the time and just stay and develop relationships, you find that there's a lot of common ground to connect with people who don't know Christ yet around serving, around caring for the environment, and it's just beautiful. And once people do cross that bridge and they see, oh, this is something that makes sense, and relationally I can connect some of these dots, it's really actually really compelling. So I really enjoy it.
How often do you, I mean, would you say most of the people there have pretty much no church background, even from childhood?
So it's no church background, or it's church background from childhood, and they just – it became distasteful to them. And so a lot of our folks that come to Church at the Well are folks who – they might have a little bit of church experience when they were younger, but they kind of either stepped away from it for one reason or the other, and are just kind of coming back into it, looking for a more authentic, like genuine expression of faith.
And how
we get a lot of that also, just to throw into that, like, you know, Adam was mentioning, like, it's a very it's a community where people are always moving in and out, and a lot of that has to do with the economy and the age of the people. And so we have also just people from all over the country and the world, so you know there's not one super consistent background that people have, because mm-hmm. they're not really, most people aren't from Vermont. Mm-hmm. We certainly do, because young people come to Burlington who grew up in Vermont because there's nothing for them in the town that they grew up in for the most part. And so they tend to come, if they stay, they tend to end up in Burlington.
So Burlington area, or Chittenden County, is a third of the state's population. So the state has around 600,000 people, and about a third of them live here. So it's real rural everywhere else, and so a lot of students come to Burlington as kind of a way to kind of leave their little towns where there's not much happening in the economy. So a lot of young professionals and folks like that are here.
But they're still probably no more than an hour from home.
Yeah, a lot of them. Right? I mean, we have a number of people who are like that, who fit that mold. And it's just, like, I was actually talking to a friend about this the other night who comes to our church, and he drives from Stowe, which is probably an hour. And, you know, he was just saying, and he comes to play soccer with us, which is even further. You know, I was asking about his friends and getting to know people in the area. And he just said, you know, it's really tough in Stowe because there's just not a lot of people his age to connect with. And the people that he has met just want to, like, get together and party in their ski bums. And he's like, that's not my thing. And so the reality is, like, there are just all these forces that kind of push younger people to Burlington because that's where things are happening. So the other thing I just would say about the culture here that's really significant that we've learned is that it's not so much that people are not open to the gospel or that they're opposed to faith. It's that they are very hesitant about institution. And it's and I'm sure that this is true a lot of other places as well. But, like, we've heard, you know, you hear this from people a lot talking about, you know, I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious. And you hear, like, there was a program on the radio recently where they specifically talked about religion in Vermont. It was a local kind of radio show. And so they're asking a ton of people about what they believed and what they were involved with. And it was just the theme that you heard over and over from people is that they, you know, faith was kind of important to them. And a lot of times they sort of shaped their own religion, you know, out of various factors, and that people are just really, really hesitant to get connected to an institution. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that. I think the church here has had a lot of conflict and has been unhealthy in a lot of respects. It's also people are coming out of most people who do have a faith background are coming out of a French Catholic tradition that has really grown very weak, I think, in a lot of ways. And there has been some really, you know, ugly abuse scandals that have taken place that have affected the community. And so people just, you know, Vermont has a long history of being a place where people went to live alternative sort of lifestyles. So that's also built into the, you know, that's built into the culture. People who left, who went to Canada to avoid the draft, you know, a lot of those people ended up in Vermont when they came back. So there's just all these factors that are kind of mixed into the culture that make people very hesitant about institution.
Yeah.
Which is why we were talking about that piece of just of time. Building relationships, it's just super important. Like you can't plant a church in the Northeast in a year and a half. Like it's a 7-year process to reach any kind of sustainability, because that's what it takes here.
So with all of that backdrop and background, what does the life of Church at the Well look like? Like the weekly rhythms or maybe monthly, you know, however that plays out.
Yeah, well, the first thing that we tried to do when we first merged our churches together, we didn't have a name for our church for the first month and a half. And so I remember we're meeting in a theater. We have over 100 people coming, and we're like, welcome to our church. We don't know what our name is yet. And then we took a whole year just to kind of develop our core values because we didn't want a false start. And so everything, which is okay because everything happens slow in the Northeast anyway. It's all town hall. It's all like, you know, it's slow and methodical, and that's just the way people operate here. And so we took a whole year just to come up with our vision and values. The second year of our merger, we just kind of said, let's just focus on our Sunday gathering. Like, let's not have a lot of programs. We're not a huge event or program driven church. We just want to kind of be in that process of building relationship and getting to know folks. But we said, hey, the second year, let's just really work at getting a good Sunday morning gathering happening. Because when we brought two churches together, it was almost like the Brady Bunch in the sense that you're bringing two families into the same space. And we just felt like that's going to take a year just to where it starts to feel like one family. Then we focused really hard on, again, getting our Sunday gathering going well. And then this year, we just started to like think about what is reintroducing Jesus here in Vermont look like. How does that look outside of a Sunday morning service? And so we're about a year and a half into small groups, and there's some local nonprofits in town that we kind of partner with and becoming friends with. And so we're just really developing that aspect right now of the mission of the church and what it looks like apart from Sunday gathering.
Mm-hmm. And so Sunday mornings in particular, how do those feel? Do you try to incorporate an old guard to give people a sense of establishment or new and fresh? What's that?
Well, we have always kind of viewed the Sunday gathering as a conversation starter, not a conversation ender. And so I think everything we do has that feel to it. We meet in the mornings in downtown Burlington, right kind of close to the lake. And so we're able to we meet in the film house, which is interesting, thinking about our context and people's perspective of church as an institution and that being something that might keep them away. And we found a meeting at the film house kind of in this space that is literally a community space. It's used throughout the week by different businesses, different nonprofits, different organizations. That's kind of like one barrier that's broken down for people as they look to explore faith or spirituality or Christianity or Jesus. And so we meet there at the film house, and you come in, we have a time of worship and singing, and that's usually kind of acoustic. We don't have a very big sound system. We don't have a drum set, and we store everything we have kind of in this little storage closet in the hallway. And so we've gotten really, really good at kind of like Tetris each week, trying to fit in the speakers and fit in the different boxes with supplies and stuff.
Yeah, this closet's like 3x6.
Nice.
Wow. And our whole church basically fits in there. Not all the people. But.
Last week I was talking to a group of interns at another church, and they asked me, they said, How do you combat or fight against people viewing your worship gatherings or your times as a performance or as entertainment? And I said, well, we don't have to worry about that at all. We don't think about that, because what we do is pretty bare bones. Mm-hmm. And so we have, you know, a little like djembe drum off into the corner. And we usually have teaching and preaching that lasts about 25 to 30 minutes on average, and so not very long. And that's usually about it. More recently, we've been trying to incorporate the community and people from the church community into our services more. And so we have a lot of writers, a lot of creatives, a lot of artists. And so highlighting and giving them time just to share and kind of let the rest of the church kind of see what's going on. Than what God is doing in their lives individually as well.
We also recently, like in the last several months, launched some post-service prayer ministry, because our church had crossed a threshold where it was like impossible for one or even two or three people to pastor the whole church. And so we're trying to get some structures and systems in place where we can kind of accomplish some of those pastoral things. And so the post-service prayer time at the church has been like one of those avenues. And that's another thing that we're really kind of emphasizing for folks to come and be involved in that.
So like if you need prayer, go back by the popcorn machine.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. That's pretty much it.
Without the popcorn. Yeah, I mean, I would throw into this, I think it's really significant in terms of the way that we set up our worship that it looks in a lot of ways like traditional church, you know, so that there's safety there. This isn't a cult. It's a large group gathering in a public space that people recognize. I think those kind of forms are really important. I think it'd be somewhere between difficult and impossible to have a cell-based kind of church in Vermont, mm-hmm. because we have such a long heritage of cults, mm-hmm. and a sort of a weird kind of tradition there.
Especially for a non-denominational church like ours.
Right. Right.
So it was actually really helpful. Like, we originally met in a church basement, and that was actually really good because, you know, we were meeting in a space that had validity to it for a church that had been there for 150 years. So the fact that they were willing to host us, you know, said something about who we were. So we kind of built out of Sunday worship because that's the norm that people understand. And then, you know, we're also not traditional. So it's very casual, you know, it's very informal. I think we, like Ian was saying, we've been working really hard to get a lot of people up front on Sunday. So it's not just one person talking, you know, and it's very, I think, huge for our church that the language that we use is not churchy. It's not, you know, you don't have to know anything about the Bible. And that's, you know, we talked about how people don't have a church background necessarily. And so, you know, we talk with friends. I had a conversation with a friend once where I mentioned Noah. I think like Noah and the flood, and they looked at me like, "Who's that? What are you talking
Russell
about?"
Crowe.
Yeah, no, it's like, it's in the movies. Come on. So, you know, you just, that's really important that people understand the form because they still connect to that idea of church. That's what church is, but that then you're also speaking to them in ways that they can understand. And it doesn't feel like traditional church because that's, you know, they're being a little bit hypocritical, which is kind of how we are as human beings. They want the safety of what they know, but they want it to be different.
Yeah.
Mm. And need it. I mean, we need it to be different. You know, we need to be shaken up. We need to be challenged. And that's a big part of what we're trying to do is we're trying to, you know, take people out of the routine and the busyness of everyday life and dig deeper.
Matt, what are you chewing on over there?
Yeah, well, I was just going to ask what... I know Kevin and Ian are both bivocational. So what's the yep. other part of the vocation? I know Adam has been bivocational in the past. What were you up to when you were doing the bivocational route?
Yeah. So I was bivocational in the first 5.5 years here, and I did everything from working in banks. I did social work. I even worked for TSA for 3.5 years, and talk about strange. I had to confiscate toothpaste from one of my parishioners. That was a little bit strange.
That was great.
Patting down my parishioners. But I worked at TSA, which was like super humbling for me, but it provided, you know, medical insurance for my family and stuff. But it was one of the worst, most difficult jobs I've ever had. But it was also beautiful in the sense that like I worked with about 100 folks. And the first year that they found out I was a pastor who was bivocational, they didn't even want to talk to me. By the time I had left 3 years later, they were listening to our podcast. I was officiating and doing weddings and funerals for them. I had folks from TSA who were coming up to me asking me to pray for them, confessing affairs to me. And it was just beautiful to see, again, that whole idea of time and just trust. And it was cool because I felt like I had two congregations, my coworkers and my friends at the airport and the church plant that I was doing. So, but it was really, at the same time, really difficult. And so now these guys are bivocational, and I just get to do the other piece.
So the Burlington Airport is big enough to employ 100 TSA workers?
Yeah, because you have to have shifts around, you know, all
24
through.
24 hours.
Well, not 24 hours, but close to it.
Yeah. You also have to remember with Burlington, we're the only city in Vermont.
So
we're the only, there's no cities of any significance in upstate New York either. So.
And we're an hour and 10 minutes from Montreal. So lots of Canadians come across our border. Like 50% of our passengers here are flying out of Burlington International Airport are from Canada.
Gotcha.
That's much cheaper than flying out of
when
Canada.
They're going in within
so
the state.
It's actually quite busy, yeah.
So, like, same thing, like, our hospital is massive because we just serve a huge area. There's basically two hospitals that serve Vermont.
And I assume they're teaching hospitals as well.
Yeah, they're connected with the university. So we've actually had a lot of medical students, too, who've been a part of the church, which has been really cool.
So
and doctors. We have a very – if you had any kind of a medical emergency in our church,
you'd be good.
Yeah, we have a brain surgeon.
We'd be well cared for, yeah. We have a neurosurgeon. He's eclipsed some of the other healthcare workers as having the most education.
So the body language amongst the three of you seems pretty warm and affinitive. I think I just created a word there. But you co-pastor. So what is it? How does it work when there's difference? What's the process look like when you're thinking about things that need to be different? Or opinions well, vary.
One of the keys for us is just the commitment to when we do disagree, to disagree agreeably and to defer. Mm-hmm. And it's impossible for the model that we're kind of in to work without just a sense of humility to defer. And when we were first talking about merging, I was at first like, no way, this does not work. Like there's no books on there of successful church mergers. Well, we found one. I think it was called Building Together. But most of the mergers, it was a book of case studies, and most of them were like, one had lots of finances and no people. One had lots of people and no finances and a sense of vitality, and they merged. They kind of had to. And in our merger, we were both kind of young churches with no finances and no vitality. And so there really wasn't any kind of model for that. But we spent a year and a half, like with our leadership teams getting together, making sure there was chemistry and trust, because trust is big, and just friendship, and that we would like each other. We had a consultant come in from the Orchard Group, spend some time with us, and we just really took our time doing that, and so now we have the benefit of putting in that time and effort. And so there is a good sense of trust and camaraderie, and we really like each other. It's great when you can work with people that you like.
So it's not even so much that you have to have a defined process. It's just you've built that rapport.
Yeah, exactly. And when we, even from the beginning, when we first merged, you know, it meant, you know, it's not like it's always easy or that it doesn't have its frustrations, but, you know, it meant accepting the fact that you were going to play a certain part in the community. Mm-hmm. And that might not necessarily be, for the time being, what you wanted. I mean, Ian was a volunteer staff basically at Mosaic, and he was doing a lot of preaching. And now all of a sudden we had, you know, Adam and I co-pastoring the church, and he was filling, as far as preaching, a much smaller role than what he had before. So, you know, he had to be willing to embrace that. And for Adam and I, you know, we were used to being solo kind of lead pastors. And so, you know, we just decided we had to co-pastor, and we had to figure out what that looked like.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I think that there are times where there's frustrations. I find for myself, you know, in terms of like dealing with differences or conflict, I mean, some of it is that we're really good about talking directly to one another and dealing with that, you know, and avoiding, like, we try not to let things lie. And you know, and then you sit down with somebody who's a really good friend, and it's usually pretty easy at that point to hash it out. But I also just find that, like, I'll just think, okay, you know, maybe we disagree about this thing, but here are all the other things I appreciate about working with these guys, you know, that and that stuff just always so dramatically outweighs the stuff that you might be frustrated with in the moment. And so that's a big thing for me, is I just keep coming back to the fact that, like, I'll take, you know, the fact that we might disagree about, you know, these little things because I want to be a part of the team.
Yeah. Cause you've been alone.
I found that passive aggressive emails work really well.
Really? But,
no, I think interestingly enough that we see each other so much that we talk a lot. And so I think that kind of helps the dynamic. And I think Adam had mentioned the word deferring, which I think is pretty important. And if I have a difference of opinion with these guys, I tend to just assume that, you know, I just might be wrong in that, and to just let that go. So,
because there was that one time you were wrong. There's always possibility.
We're all very good at being wrong and missing it. And so I think we let go of those things pretty easily. So
I know we want to wind down, and I know that there's so many more things I would like to ask about. So we could view this as a conversation starter rather than ender, right? Callback. But I'm also aware that I totally hijacked the prior question about bivocation. Because I was so enamored with TSA in Burlington, Vermont. So what did the other two of you do? Or do you do now, actually?
Yeah, so I was full-time before, but I really had a desire to do grad school again. I had done a theology degree at Gordon Conwell, but I wanted to study writing and pursue writing. And so I had gotten into a writing program at Bennington College a couple of years ago. I actually just finished. So that was my other half, and I'm continuing to, you know, for me now it's writing, it's hopefully beginning to teach a little bit of writing, and then also I'm interested in building and real estate, and so we have an apartment that we built connected to our house, and so I spend time managing that, and I think that's going to be, I definitely anticipate that being kind of a part of my career in the future. It's a very flexible thing that I can do on the side, which is investing in the, we have a like incredible demand for housing around here. So,
gotcha.
So that's something that I can do, and Ian can tell. Ian's is actually.
Well, I'm kind of a little. My life is a little chaotic right now, but I just started a small coffee roasting business, and so that's been taking up a lot of time, and it's been a lot of fun. But it's not generating ton of revenue for me, and so I'm still working a few nights in the restaurant industry. And I'm also a part-time student at Western Seminary based out of Portland, Oregon. So I'm mostly online.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, wow, that's quite the commute.
Yeah. Yes. Every once in a while.
Your eyes is blank because it's Portland.
So it's mostly online.
You can get from Burlington to Portland via bike just because they're both connected in a deep spiritual.
There's a trail.
Yeah, there's a trail. Yeah.
This is about the time of the day where I stopped listening to these guys.
Well, we were coming off of another meeting, so we're starting to get sick of each other.
Fair enough. Well, we will wrap up here because this is, we've already gone over what we shoot for, but I really appreciate the two of you, or the three of you. I have no idea why I said that. I appreciate two out of the three of you. I'll let you decide. yeah. Thanks so much for joining us. We look forward to seeing all three of you very soon at the Ecclesia National Gathering next month.
Yeah, catch you in Delaware.
Yeah, we'll see you in Delaware.
Because we didn't even get to touch base on, other than an allusion, how you found Ecclesia and why you joined it. So that can be a question that everybody who hears this can ask you at the National Gathering.
Mm. All right. Sounds good.
One last question. People are curious, what's the website for your church?
Well, Church. VT as in Vermont.com.
There it is. So if somebody wants to see more or any of that, there it is. And we'll link to it from the Ecclesia website too. So
cool.
Well, thanks a lot, guys. Good to see your faces.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hear your voices.
In a couple weeks.
Good to see you guys.
Yeah. Thanks, Matt.
See you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.